down the road, you'll be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the ones you did. So dream, explore, say yes to life. Be inspired to live life as an exciting adventure of discovery. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and I'm your host, Mark Susnow. Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow. Thanks for tuning in to the Inspire Possibility Show. And as you know, every week I invite various individuals that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people that hopefully will enlighten us, inspire us, kind of get us to think deeper and bigger, and entertain us at the same time. And this week I invited the Reverend Mary Shelton. She's a spiritual minister at Centers for Spiritual Living. She's been doing that since 1986. Currently, she's at the Golden Gate Center for Spiritual Living. She was a professional actress. She's an author. She wrote a book called Guidance from the Darkness, another book called Coming Up for Air, which has a lot of motivational quotes and spiritual sayings in it. And I wanted to have this conversation with her, and as somebody I know personally, so I invited her to be our guest. So welcome, Reverend Mary Shelton, to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you, Mark. It's delightful to be with you today.
Good. And I was talking with you off air there. I know that whenever you go to a center for spiritual living, there are these phrases that change your thoughts, change your life. Mm-hmm. And all of us have heard there was the movie The Secret. Same idea, visualize what you want, and it will be created. And so it's great in theory, and a lot of times it really works, but not all the time. And so what I'd like to do is have a conversation around this concept if all it was to change your thinking, your life would be magical. Mm-hmm. Everybody would be always very happy, but it doesn't seem to be that way. So what's mm-hmm. your thinking about there? About that idea, and then how do you do that? How do you go about changing your thoughts? Because you always that little voice eating at you, hey, you shouldn't have said that. You're not good
right.
enough.
Right, right. I think it's more complicated to change our thinking than the catchphrase sounds like. It sounds, well, it's easy, just change your thinking, change your life. But when we talk about thought, we're not talking about every random thought that goes by. We're really talking about our deeply held beliefs, and some of them we're not even consciously aware of because we don't think of them as beliefs. We think of them as the truth. And so mm-hmm. we're less likely to question what we think is the truth, and yet those things that we believe to be the truth have a tendency to reproduce themselves in our lives, and it isn't necessary that they be true for that to happen. So it's easier to spot that in other people sometimes than it is in ourselves. When you see somebody that
exactly.
seems to have difficulties in relationship, and that from your perspective they're always choosing the same kind of person and then having
right.
the same kind of problems with them,
yeah.
that is a belief kind of thing that's underneath there about what relationships need to be like, what an ideal partner needs to be like. So if we want to really change our deeply held beliefs, we first have to kind of do some self-examination to discover what they are and be willing to ask ourselves, how could I think about this differently? Or what if this isn't the whole truth? What if what I believe about myself or what I believe about life or this other person that I've been collecting evidence for, so I have a pretty heavy amount of evidence to support my belief in this, what if I actually were to question it? How would I go about trying to do that when I have to counter all this evidence I've already collected? And sometimes we have to make a leap of faith where we say, this can't be the whole truth because it's too painful and difficult. there must be more to it than what I'm seeing. Because we do believe in new thought, and in Centers for Spiritual Living, we teach that the universe is always saying yes to us and always meant to be a place that opens us into greater good and deeper expression of who we truly are. And so sometimes we even have to look at the darkness and difficulty that we're experiencing and say, how might this be something that's trying to free me or forward me or bless me in some way that I can't see because I'm so attached to the familiar or what I believe? And, you know, the universe is always offering us opportunities to grow and stretch and challenge those beliefs. I'm thinking right now of a fellow that I met years ago who became a good friend, whose father was a fundamentalist minister, and he'd grown up in that religion, and discovered himself to be a gay man as an adult. He was at Oral Roberts University studying for divinity, and got kicked out of school because of his
Oral Roberts is
orientation.
Not exactly. Yeah, Oral Roberts is not exactly San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah.
And so for a while, this guy just kind of threw off religion altogether because he couldn't be who he wasn't. And his brother, to complicate matters for this poor minister, his brother was also gay and died of AIDS.
Oh, well.
And when he was diagnosed, the father actually, you know, had the courage in his grief to go to his congregation and say, my son is gay and he's dying of AIDS and I'm experiencing tremendous grief. But this whole experience of his two sons deeply challenged this man's beliefs, what he believed to be the truth at a deep level. And it transformed him and it transformed his ministry. And I think that when we change our thinking, it can be earth-shaking for us to do that. And ultimately, the blessing that comes sometimes also involves letting go of things, and it's not always 100% easy or pain-free to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's a process.
Yeah, it is a process, and it requires, you know, it does require a certain amount of willingness to really look at ourselves with a lot of honesty and willingness to consider that we might be missing something, we might be short-sighted in some way. And our lives, I think, do become happier when we're more free from some of those limiting beliefs. But, you know, often we've been collecting evidence for them for so long that it's hard for us to do that, to make that leap.
So what I was just thinking as you were talking, one of the inquiries you might want to make is kind of along the lines of Byron Katie's work. Is this really true? Is this belief I have about reality, is this really true? I think that's really.
And can I absolutely know it's true? Because usually when you ask that second question, you know, it's clear that mostly we can't absolutely know for sure about anything. So that always opens it up to the possibility of being questioned.
Right. So you what prompted you to become a minister of this particular path, the Center for Spiritual Living? What got you?
I was raised Catholic. I had done a lot of questioning throughout my life from about my teenage years on about spirituality. It was really important to me. And in the 70s, I did a personal growth training like people did back then, and it really shifted my spiritual perspective. The loving relationship training. A loving relationship training.
I know about that
one. Sandra Ray put that together, and she was an EST graduate. So it was kind of related to some of the work that Werner Erhard had done, although it was distinct from EST. And other people may know that as the Forum, or I think it has another name now, and I can't remember what it is at the moment.
It's Landmark, Landmark Forum. Yeah.
Landmark. Well, it was Landmark in between, right? It was EST.
No,
was
it became,
Forum,
it went from EST to the Landmark Forum.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Landmark Anyhow, was the entity, came the entity.
I believe it has another name that it goes by now. But anyway, you know, that it shifted my perspective on my spiritual path. And then I came across what is now Centers for Spiritual Living. It had a different name at that time. And I felt my acting background had kind of come to a halt. Although I still loved it, I felt that there was something calling me and I wasn't sure what it was. So I really went on a quest to find out what was next for me. And when people started coming up to me at the church in Seattle, when I was a member there, I would do announcements and people would say to me, gee, you're really good up on the stage, up on the platform up there. Have you ever thought about being a minister? Which I thought was kind of hysterically funny at the time.
Uh-huh.
But it showed up more and more in my life until I really had to come to grips with it and say, okay, well, let's take a look at this and see. So when I got into the school of ministry, I kept telling people I was only doing it for personal growth, that really I didn't know that I was going to be a minister. And then about halfway through the coursework, it dawned on me that, yes, indeed, I really was going to be a minister.
Right.
So it kind of snuck up on me, you know, gradually it got me in and then closed the deal once I was in there.
Yeah. Don't you think that's a way, I mean, for a lot of people, they're all of a sudden they get called to do something. They're looking at it. They're not really sure exactly. They know their current situation isn't right. It's not working for them, but they don't know what their next step is. So they kind of dabble a little bit, and then they get zapped and go, okay, I'm called. This is what I got to do.
The call, I think, looks like that often, you know, that it isn't what you expect, but it turns out to be such a good fit for you that really you couldn't deny it when you look into it more deeply. I think that calls come to us in that way unexpectedly sometimes. We're looking for what it is, but we don't see the match ourselves right away, or at least that's how it often works for me. I need to kind of let it pull me in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, listen to life. Listen to what life tells you.
Yeah, and it'll come and get you.
Yeah. What about your, so the book, what I like the title because it's similar to a little bit what I write about, the guidance from the darkness.
Yeah.
And what was going on in your life. I always look at people teach what they need to learn. So I'm curious, when you wrote that book, what was going on in your life, guidance from the darkness?
Well, you know, I had felt that the darkness got a bad rap, kind of, that the where we live most of our life is in the realm of the known, which is kind of the realm of light. But the where the possibilities live is in the unknown. Where the unlimited potential and possibilities exist is not within the circle of what we already know, or we would already be doing that. And so I felt like there was a lot of richness in the void, in the darkness, in the unknown, that was a fruitful place. And I saw it as the dwelling place kind of the divine feminine. If you look at the, and I'm not talking about male and female now, but the qualities of masculinity as being active and directive and goal-oriented and focused, and the qualities of the feminine of being nonlinear and spontaneous and receptive and intuitive, that creativity emerges from this unknown kind of place. And artists will tell you that when they're working on creating something, there's a point at which what they're following and creating begins to take the lead and create itself. Sometimes they weren't expecting it to go that direction, but that's the direction it pulls them to go in. So there is something mystical that happens in that. And I think that we are more available to the mystery sometimes when we're in the midst of difficulties and challenges in our lives. While everything's going smoothly and we're in the light and we feel like it's all going great and we know what we're doing, we're not necessarily open to more guidance. We might be, but boy, do we look for guidance when things are tough. And that's
exactly
when the barriers are down. You know, our authenticity is opened at a deeper level.
We're more vulnerable.
Yeah, and more accessible.
Yeah.
You know, women who have given birth recognize that the most difficult part of the birth, unless you have some kind of a spinal block so that you don't feel it, is the transition phase where you have the physical animal urge to push, but the body isn't open enough yet, so you have to wait. And that transition phase is very difficult. And it seems to me that that's what happens to us in times of darkness, too. We're going through a birthing process. I mean, we call it labor in English for a reason. We're going through a birthing process that is requires everything of us sometimes. So if we receive a difficult diagnosis or we lose our business or our partner leaves us or a child dies, you know, we're in a sense broken, but we're also in a sense broken open, and something new has the opportunity to emerge if we can let it. And so it seemed to me that the darkness itself provides a gift and guidance if we know that and can make way for it or invite it or seek it or be open to it.
If we only know that when we're going through it, right?
Yeah. And it's
how many times
we need so much
compassion. How many times you have to go through that to finally believe it, to where you just believe that something good and miraculous and phenomenal is going to occur.
Yeah. And that's tough. We need so
much
compassion and listening, people listening to us and allowing us to explore what we're experiencing in order to come to that wisdom ourselves, because it doesn't do any good to have somebody else tell us. We have to find it. It's kind of like Dorothy with, you know, wanting to go home to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
She had the ability, but it wouldn't have helped if Glenda had told her at the beginning, because she wouldn't have believed it. We have to kind of find our way into it. We need some space for that. Sometimes somebody pointing us in that direction is helpful, but nobody can do that for us. That steep walk, we can have companions, but we still have to do the walk.
Right. Or some people say you got to do the push-ups. You got to do the work. You just can't wish it.
Yeah, that's right.
So tell me about what your message right now is to, if there is one thing that you were going to say to people that they should one bit of advice you would say to people, what is that? What would that be? What is that?
I would, you know, it's interesting you ask that, Mark, because that's I'm doing an 8-week program at Golden Gate Center for Spiritual Living right now on what I feel like is an essential message. And the title of the 8 weeks is Dare to Live the Life You Came to Live. I believe that we're all here with a gift to give and a lesson to learn, at least one of each, maybe more. And the best way to learn the lesson is to give the gift, to really take the risk of going for what we came here for. And it may lead us into an area that we weren't expecting that's actually what we're here for, and we didn't know it yet. But unless we have the daring to step forward into that, we kind of live a half-life of reruns. Every day is the same. Mary Manon Morrissey said once, you know, some people live 99 years. Some people live 1 year 99 times.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Maybe there's a happy medium.
Sure, yeah, because we do have some of every day that's like the day before, but hopefully not all of it.
So then that's the idea is to encourage people to speak out, to be their truth. There's, you know, there's a song that I like to sing by Nina Simone, called I Wish I Could Be Free, and one of the lines is, you know, say it loud, say it clear for the whole wide world here.
Yeah.
You know, to just to let people know what your truth is, because if you don't tell them, they're not going to know.
Yeah. And it does
and
require courage
willing,
to do that.
Absolutely. Courage, yes. Total courage. And
and courage
also being willing to maybe make a fool of yourself, to kind of, you know, to do that too.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for me, one of the things about acting is setting aside all concern that you're going to make a fool of yourself, because you can't enter fully into a character. And I think this is true for any kind of artist. whatever you're expressing, you can't enter into it fully if you're worried about how people are going to take it or how it's going to be received or what they're going to say about you or how you're going to look. Because I've lived in Sonoma County for a long time, I had the great privilege of knowing Charles Schulz, the cartoonist. And I asked him, when I first met him, I remember asking him about his cartoon strip. I said, you know, do you think about the millions of people that are reading this and looking at it every single day and the impact that your message has on them? And he said, oh, no, if I thought about that, I wouldn't be able to pick up a pencil.
Wow.
And, you know, that's the thing. In order to do what we're here to do, we have to let it lead the way. Martha Graham said something once about, you know, your job is to do what you're here to express. You don't even have to believe in what you do. You just have to do it. You have to stop worrying about it. And this is one of the things that I quoted in Coming Up for Air. I don't have the exact quote in my head at the moment, but it's something that she said about creativity and what the creative person is here for and how important that is because the world needs it and will only get it if you do it.
So let me ask you a question here. So you tell us a little bit about how people can get your books on Amazon, I assume, right?
Yes, yes. They can order them on Amazon in paperback or as ebooks.
Uh-huh. And then
Guidance from the Darkness, actually, I have revised now, and it has a new title, which is called A Darkness Filled with Light. But you can get that as an ebook or a paperback. The older versions of Guidance from the Darkness are still available used on Amazon also, and they're not updated, but the substance is the same.
Mm-hmm. Amazon's so amazing. It really
yeah.
is.
Just, yeah,
yeah,
it's wonderful. I think it's a great
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, especially like for people that are writers, right? That makes it so easy to put out a book and create a following. And just simplifies things. And I know from an author, they're so helpful compared to the other platform, which is Ingram. I love Amazon for.
Yeah.
And their customer service is great. So what about
and it's
then
wonderful
you give
for
regular,
writers because they're. Sorry, I just want to throw this plug-in for them.
Oh, go ahead.
I think they're wonderful
for
writers, too, because they have a lot of resources. Create Space is the name of their program for writers online, you know, to be able to write your own and upload and produce it and all that. And it just they really provide a lot of information for writers. It's great.
They do. They totally do. So what would you say right now is your biggest challenge?
Oh, gosh, I just have too much to do. I think my biggest challenge is always with getting everything in the amount of time that's available. Time and I have a very squirrely relationship. So I have so many projects that are happening all right now, and I'm so excited about them. I just want them to all be in full flower immediately, you know. And so I need to be able to really savor the process. Because the process is probably the most important part, not just getting to the goal, but getting on the way to the goal is really where the juice is. So I need to, I really need to remind myself of that and not always trying to be the racehorse in the race, but sometimes being the racehorse, you know, just getting ready for the race.
Uh-huh. Right. Or I was always, I remember when I would, when I used to be really busy when I was an attorney many, many years ago, getting ready to go on a trip. And it was all about once I'm there, I can relax. Once I head for the airport, I can relax. Or, you know, and then I got it to where, you know what, why can't I just do it every day? Why can't I just be in that space every day of finding peace and joy and,
yeah,
and
that's so
grateful.
Great. That's so great. I used to do that, Mark, and then I would get to my vacation spot and I'd get sick.
Oh.
Because I hadn't, you know, given myself any breathing space before that. So once I finally got to let down, I had no stamina left. So really, it is very important to learn how to do that and enjoy the journey.
Right. And do you have tell us a little bit about your Sunday service that you lead, that so how people can access that. How do they do
well,
that?
Well, we do post videos of the Sunday talk on YouTube when they're ready, after they've been cleaned up and edited and whatever we need to do with them, which isn't a lot, but it just takes a while because it's all done by volunteers. And so we have a channel on YouTube that's free. It's GGCSL, like Golden Gate Center for Spiritual Living, GGCSL TV, all lowercase, all one word. That's the name of our channel, and people can go to that, and they can see a lot of past Sundays. But what we're working with now is upgrading our camera technology and everything. So they're going to be seeing some big changes with that. And one of the visions that we have is to be doing a Facebook Live kind of posting of the Sunday talk once we get all the bells and whistles together. So people can stay tuned to that or take a look. But it's kind of like going to a Sunday service, except, you know, in other places, except that the message is different, the music is different, the belief system and fellowship are different. So when I first came into this in the 1970s, the late 1970s, and I ran into a woman at a party, and we were just talking about, you know, what we've been doing, and I said, I've been going to this church with a funny name, because it used to be called Church of Religious Science.
I remember.
And she said, oh, I've never heard of that, but I don't do church. And I said, I don't blame you. And, you know, what I think about this place now in my newness of it is, if you don't like church, you'll love this. And honestly, I can say I still think that's true, that I was astounded at the time that there was actually a spiritual organization that believed these things and taught them.
It
still is the deepest truth for me. And I still feel like it's new to people, even now, when the philosophy has been around for a long, long time.
Well, you know, I used to read a lot of spiritual magazines and none of, like, regular church or synagogues or anything like formalized religion I really resonated with. But I used to like this magazine. I used to read Yoga Journal and New Age Journal, all those kind of things.
Sure.
And then I went, and then I read the Science of Mind magazine, and I went, wow. And then I went to a service, and I just went to hear Michael Beckwith Friday night. And it's just the same, you know, it's a philosophy of just finding your truth and realizing that, you know, believing in a higher power, but not necessarily, you know, a particular person. And that was the shift for me, was to let go of this idea it has to be a person, and to tune into this energy, this because, you know, there's something bigger than all of us, that is this universe, that is a creative force. And once I let go of this idea of the person in the sky, it just opened up a whole new world to me.
Yeah. I think the part of the problem that people sometimes have with traditional religion is the idea of a man in the sky. They just can't get there. They just can't conceive of it. But the idea of an infinite intelligence that is continuously creative, eternal, always present everywhere, in everything, in everyone, self-aware somehow, and always present, that's pretty powerful. And I think if you're looking at, you know, the galaxies and the movement of the planets and the stars and the extreme complexity of what we know is our universe, and we probably don't know all of it, and who knows that this is the only universe, and then you look at the complexity of a single cell, it doesn't seem feasible that all of that is random. At the same time, it's very human of us to anthropomorphize the creative energy, the divine mystery, the great spirit, whatever you want to call it, that is the animating and creative force behind all of that. We want to have something to relate to that we feel is personal to us. And, you know, Hinduism didn't have a bad idea, because they just named every aspect of God they could find. But then we got confused in the West and thought they had many, many gods. But actually, that wasn't true. What they had was many, many aspects and faces of this infinite beingness. So I want to back up for just a second here, because you were asking me about Sunday. And I do want to say that for those who are in Northern California, our services are in Corte Madera, California, in Marin County at the Community Center, at 498 Tamil Pious Drive in Corte Madera at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings. And we would love to have a great influx of guests and visitors anytime.
And I invite everybody to visit the center there. It's a great experience. And Mary, we're running out of time, and it kind of goes that way. So when we're having a great conversation. So thanks so much for joining me on the Inspire Possibility Show. And to all of you out there, thanks for joining in. And as you know, every week we invite some amazing people to join us. And in the meantime, thanks again to Reverend Mary Shelton. And in the meantime, until next week, journey on. Thanks for listening. I hope you feel inspired to take the next step in your life. And if you haven't already, please take the time to visit my website at inspirepossibility.com and discover the various services and products we offer that could just very well change your life.